Welcome to Alan Dreyfus Frontier Market Coverage. This is your host, Will McBain. Today, I'm joined by Mark Boland, Senior Credit Research Analyst at Red Intelligence and former Bloomberg Africa economist. Mark, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So at the end of last week, the African Union doubled down on their intention to establish a private sector-driven African credit rating agency based on self-funding and self-sustaining. And the African Union said they will convene in Lusaka, Zambia, soon to discuss the next step. Its move comes after growing criticism by outgoing Senegalese President Macky Sall and the President and Finance Minister of Ghana, and also other key players on the continent that are saying that CRAs are biased and unfair. And so, Mark, as someone who's followed risk perceptions and credit ratings in Africa for some time now, I'd like to know your thoughts on whether there is value in an African credit ratings agency to supplement the big three in the US. But perhaps, can we rewind a little and you give us your opinion on why there are calls from Africa and elsewhere to challenge the dominance of Moody's, Fitch and S&P?
Yes, I follow these developments. I mean, you already have a few Africa-based rating agencies. There's one called Blomfield based in Cote d'Ivoire, and you have the other one in South Africa, which the name escapes me at the moment. I think they might have been bought by Moody's last few years. I think their focus is mainly on South African ratings. So I think I can understand some of the criticism, but I don't think going the way of starting their own credit rating agencies really is the right way. I think China did something similar with, called Datong, their rating agency, is something similar, which was started a few years ago, but generally is not really given that much attention to it. And I think that's the problem. A rating agency needs to be very credible among investors to actually have an impact. And if you have a rating agency which is essentially set out from the beginning that they're going to rate, that they want higher ratings, and it's also essentially organized by the debtors, I think that's quite a fundamental problem that will be difficult to get around.
Thank you. And to a fair bit of disagreements, the UNDP said last year that subjective bias in credit ratings had cost African countries over $74 billion in higher interest payments and lost opportunities. But if we look at S&P data, it shows that sub-Saharan Africa sovereigns rated in the B category between 2010 and 2023 defaulted in 22% of all cases within 5 years. The respective global number stands at a long-term average of only 16%. Can we then twist this narrative on the head and say that not only have African ratings been too high and not too low, and that the actual objectively observed bias in sovereign ratings has been in favour of Africa?
Well, I think, you know, the rating agencies do their best to be objective in their work, because they need to do that to gain credibility. So I don't think they have been in favour or too negative in a way. So I'm generally more leaning towards the latter perspective on S&P. I think that was mentioned by was Conrad Royce, one of the previous, or maybe it was another S&P analyst previously. So I think I've seen the UNDP report, and also similar claims that African countries are paying too high interest rates because of the bias of the rating agencies. And I don't give it a lot of credence, because essentially the ratings is just a small part of the market determination of the borrowing costs, the Eurobond yields, which is later what you pay when you issue new Eurobonds in the market. So this view that these African countries should be rated a lot higher, I think I don't agree with that. And then I also disagree with, say that forever, S&P that, you know, rapid upgrades would necessarily move the market very quickly and then, you know, achieve these lower rating, lower borrowing rates for these countries.
Do you think the role of credit ratings in frontier and emerging markets are in actual fact a little overemphasized, and that ratings nearly always follow the market movements driven by asset managers, be they in London or in Lagos, and the CRAs are not therefore quick to downgrade African sovereigns, as they are so often accused?
Yes, I mean, it's ratings are generally, and you could argue should be, a lagging indicator. Most often the market has already moved and priced in the news or the changes in the economic data or the developments on the ground, whether they're positive or negative. So once the actual rating change occurs, it's already been priced into the market by the market in most cases, so it doesn't actually move the market in any really strong way, more than marginally. So there are some cases where a rating change comes a bit more of a surprise and maybe can jolt the market a little bit, but I wouldn't, yeah, I'd definitely say it's just one of a number of factors that defines the borrowing costs of countries.
And what's most important to you when you're assessing the health of an economy?
So, I mean, I look at the sort of borrowing costs, or, you know, what's the, you know, interest to government revenue. Also look at upcoming debt maturities, if, you know, especially if we're in a period where rates are pretty high, as we are at the moment. Also look at the structural ratings, you know, the world governance indicators and the with CPI ratings from the World Bank are also important ratings, and kind of what goes into the structural basket. So what I've argued, I've had some interactions with UNDP and others, is that, you know, it's the rating agencies are pretty transparent what goes into these ratings. And they all of them have this ratings ramp, which is just hard data. But then you have kind of mitigation factors. Either you can kind of reduce the score or improve the score of the rating models. I've done this myself, and I think that's where the actual ability of the, you know, where there is a bit of leeway for a debtor, sort of a client of the rating agency, so in this case an African government, to come in and to argue that, you know, this score actually does not reflect properly what is the facts on the ground. So, for instance, when it comes to trade figures in Africa, there's a lot of informal trade that is getting ratings or statistic agencies are getting better at integrating this data, but there's still a lot of uncertainty about this. So you could argue that, you know, we have a lot of informal trade that's not been properly recorded. The same with, you could argue with remittances, where definitely during the pandemic, there was some doubts about if these were actually adequately reflecting what's happening on the ground. And the same with the governance ratings. So the most rating agencies, well, definitely Moody's and Fitch, S&P is not quite as transparent what they have in these. They use the World Governance Indicators, which is a good data set, but it also had some moves, I think, a little bit odd, for instance, with South Africa in the past year, also Kenya. And what I've argued with UNDP and others is there are now alternative data sets, for instance, the Mo Ibrahim African Governance Index, which is biannual. There's also something I looked at just this week, the Bertelsmann Transformation Index. So I think, you know, you can make a case, and if you can kind of find other alternative data that, you know, behind to back up your case, I think there is room to actually influence these rating agencies. And I've heard from some sources that the ownership of this client relationship with the rating agencies is not as strong with some of the African sovereigns as they are with other sovereign clients. And I think that's maybe something that maybe it would be better to actually move to work on that front rather than try to create a new rating agency from scratch.
The three big agencies have, in some quarters, controversially impacted African sovereign positions in recent times. So, for instance, we have seen Moody's downgrade Nigeria in H1 23 to then upgrade in H2 of last year. At the time, Abuja was challenging the agency on the basis that it lacked an understanding of the country's domestic environment. And then Moody's investor service in August last year made comments in which the rating agency stated that it would treat Kenya's planned buyback of a portion of its Eurobond debt as a default, which then triggered a sell-off of Kenya's Eurobonds, caused yield increases and associated decline in the Kenyan shilling. And also, there were controversies in the interpretation of defaults in Ethiopia and Cameroon. So, Mark, is there an argument that the proposed African credit rating agency, which is potentially going to be launched in 2024, could provide more precise credit ratings and better economic outlook assessments that would make borrowing cheaper for African governments, as some proponents say?
I mean, in theory, yes, but I think in practice, no, because I mean, these rating agencies have been going for close to 100 years now, I think Moody's. There's a lot of credibility built in that during that period, even though they're not perfect. I think you mentioned the Nigeria downgrade in February last year, which I found very odd, and also a lot of other investors, market participants I spoke to also found this a very odd one. So it was good to see that decision, that rating downgrade reversed. So I think, yeah, I think just there's so much credibility that's been gathered in these, even though, of course, there has been there's been criticism also in the decades that these have been established, these rating agencies, the three large ones. So I think starting one from scratch, and especially where the borrowers are the ones that control the rating agencies, I think will be very difficult. So I think it's better to just engage more with these rating agencies. So you mentioned the treatment of the distressed debt exchange, which I agree that there should be more leeway there. And for when you actually have found sort of concessional financing to buy back this debt, the transaction does that actually improve the chances that the remaining principal of this will be repaid. I think it's madness that can be viewed as a distressed debt exchange. I think it's with the case of Moody in Kenya, I think it has to do with reporting, and also that's where the African Union got it wrong. So what the Moody's say generally is that if there's a distressed debt exchange, it may be viewed as a distressed debt exchange depending on the circumstances. So those circumstances, if there's a substantial discount to par, this buyback is conducted at, that means they're bought back below the price, substantially below the price. But I mean, that doesn't really take into account that pretty much any bond that was issued 5-6 years ago will now be trading at par, below par, if it was issued at par, because ratings, the US interest rates are a lot higher than they were 5 years ago. So it's just a leeway to actually define what is substantial discount to par. And then the second criteria for Moody's is if this buyback doesn't go ahead, if there's a threat of a discount, a default, which clearly wasn't the case in Kenya. So I think this is something that is being discussed at the Global Sovereign Debt Roundtable at the moment. The rating agencies' attitude or to these debt exchanges. And I think maybe that's something we could see a change. I think that would be a positive. There was also a bit of criticism of Moody, especially Moody's, when they viewed participation. They said that they might potentially view a participation in the debt service suspension initiative in 2020 as a credit negative, which I think it was clear from the beginning that the private sector participation in that debt service suspension initiative would always be voluntary. So I think maybe they were a bit too harsh there. So maybe there's a room for a little bit of change at the rating agencies rather than just discounting them entirely.
So if the African Credit Rating Agency doesn't have the legs, is there anything African governments can do to better engage with the large three agencies right now?
Yes, I mean, I think this is just kind of hearsay that, you know, this ownership of this relationship with the rating agencies, because, I mean, the African governments are the clients, that they could do more of this. And I think that's kind of what I say is, you know, actually engage more strongly with the rating agencies and actually bring forward alternative data. If you disagree with what this rating model comes up with and the analysts, so I think that's where the African governments can do more and actually achieve more change and arguably at a lot lower cost than starting up a rating agencies. So I think that's the way to go. And I think there are African sovereigns that are already doing pretty well with this rating engagement. I mean, Benin is a country that has done very well. I haven't been there with, you know, in their engagements with the rating agencies, but they've managed to use the SDG ratings and also get several upgrades there. So I think it is already be done to some extent, but there's potential to do more.
And switching things up a little now, Mark, I know you were in Dakar recently. What was that like to be in Senegal during one of their most interesting and perhaps challenging recent democratic moments? And how do you think investors will take to new President Bassirou Diomaye Faye's government?
Yes, it was great to be in Dakar. So my original plan was to be there just after the elections to actually get the feel on what would be the outlook and the plans for the new government. But of course, the election date was moved forward or moved back by a month. So I just was there the actual week, just a week before it occurred. I was there when they released the opposition leader, now president, on Thursday the 16th of March, and those, you know, visible celebrations in the streets, and saw a few of the other parades and with the some of the candidates in person. So that was great, and I got to talk to quite a few different people, both in the kind of business community, where the kind of general preference was for Amadou Ba, the kind of ruling party candidate, even though I think they were quite skeptical of his chances. But then when you spoke to people on the street, which I did a bit, maybe not so much in depth, you know, it was clear that pretty much everyone was for Sonko. So that kind of strengthened my view that, he's the kind of, who is seen as a leader. Of course, he's not the one who actually won the election, was through Bassirou Diomaye Faye, but everyone was for Faye and Sonko. So positive that the election went ahead, that the Constitutional Court did not agree to moving forward the election date beyond President Sall's mandate. I think that can definitely be seen as evidence of the strength of Senegal's institutions. It's a question how much read across there is to other West African sovereigns, especially the Sahel ones, which are more challenged. But I think, yeah, the outlook, I think, you know, even though, you know, this euphoria now, I think it's the outlook is going to be a bit more difficult. From what I hear, is that there's not really any kind of economic or overall policymaking experience within PASTEF. And of course, they've attracted some people, you know, former Prime Minister Aminata Touré is one of those that have more experience. It's just a question if they will be given office and how much sway they'll have compared to people who've been more engaged. And also, I think there's definitely a buffer, how much of the expectations, there's definitely a discrepancy between the expectations and actually how much that can actually be implemented, because Senegal has one of the higher debt to GDP ratios in sub-Saharan Africa, around 80% of GDP. And the even though they have these offshore oil and gas fields coming online now, which have raised expectations In Senegal, the actual fiscal impact is pretty limited. It's 1 to 1.5% of GDP to start with and then gradually decreasing. So it's not going to be the kind of oil boom you had in Nigeria in the 1980s and 90s. And
PASTEF have said they will ditch the CFA franc. What's more likely, Senegal tapping into the Eurobond market this year or the first of concrete steps to change their currency?
I definitely think a Eurobond issue is more likely. So I still expect them to issue in the second half of the year. And now the rates, Eurobond rates have been quite, the Eurobond market reaction has been positive in general to elections. So they could issue now if they wanted to. I think it's going to take a bit more time to get into, get everything into place. I think if the these offshore oil and gas fields start producing, I think that will also be a positive. It's something that has been delayed several times. So I think I'm expecting a Eurobond to be sold in the second half of the year. And I think it's quite clear that they will be able to issue. But it's a question how much of a spread they'll have to pay over US treasuries. And I think if they get a good team into place and get a credible, well, not too much of a shift from existing fiscal policy, that would be a positive. Because I think, you know, yes, that it's a very high public debt to GDP ratio. So I think the what the Barr administration or Sall, or Macky Sall, what they'd agree with the IMF was to initially try to reduce the debt to GDP below 70% of GDP. And then after that, maybe spend a bit more of the oil revenue. I think that was a generally prudent fiscal strategy.
Super. And finally for today, we have a wall of Eurobond repayments this year, but also some exciting developments going on in Egypt and Ivory Coast. If you can pick up your crystal ball for a moment, will 2024 be a year of defaults and credit rating downgrades? Or will another narrative emerge?
Well, I've always, well, not always, but I've pushed against this kind of wave that there was going to be a wave of defaults. I think it was always, it was never particularly credible. So there was a bit of an uptick in Eurobond redemptions in 2024, but a large part of that was, well, it was Kenya, South Africa, and Egypt. And the Kenya, I think it did happen. I think they were more or less forced to issue this Eurobonds because they needed the alternative would have been to borrow in the domestic market at even higher rates. So I think it's like it's good that it went out of the way. They got that out of the way, and they do have time to kind of persuade the Eurobond market. They don't have a lot of Eurobond maturities from now until 2030. So that's a positive. But yeah, to answer your question, I don't think there's going to be a lot of defaults. It's more going to be a drip than anything. I think you might have one or two every other year or so. So yeah, Kenya, that they locked in this high high rates borrowing, and their interest to government revenue is is pretty high, close to 30% interest. They're paying 5.5% of GDP in government with the government interest costs every year. That's a very high figure. I mean, the Senegalese figures is half of that, 2.5 or somewhere around that. So Kenya is definitely there, still a concern. I think Burkina Faso and Mali is definitely a concern. And that's where, you know, if Senegal can't issue this year, they're going to borrow more in the local market. That might, and that will affect the available financing for the other Sahel countries. But I think going forward, I think the Eurobond market will still be, African Eurobond market will still be there. You're not going to have maybe the same issuance volumes as in previous years. And you're not going to have this sort of Nigeria, Ghana coming every year, borrowing two or 3 billion every year. So you're going to have smaller, more irregular issues from countries like Tanzania, Togo, Uganda could come there. So maybe there's going to be a higher number of countries for African analysts and investors to look at. But I also think the kind of competency and the knowledge of the African countries has improved materially in the past 10 years. I think you could see that it was, you know, with Senegal, well, President Macky Sall delayed elections, was just before Benin's Eurobond issue. And I think maybe 10, 15 years ago, you would see maybe a kind of this spread that it would have negatively affected the Benin's Eurobond issue. But I think people now are so well informed that they can actually differentiate the risk between Senegal and Benin.
Mark, thanks as ever. Great to have you on.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.